This is Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your home for common sense, science-based healthcare. Here's your host, Dr. TJ Williams.
And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
I like the little pause there. Made everyone wonder, is she actually going to say hi today? Made me think. Made me wonder. Because you never know. One of these days, she's just not going to say anything. Just like that. She's just being defiant. She's like, nope, I'm not saying a word. I'm just going to sit here. So I'm your host, Dr. TJ, like I said, and I might be with you all day today. I'm not really sure. But today on the show, we are going to talk about irritable bowel syndrome. This is a topic that is, I feel it's extremely important. We talk a lot about this in the office. A lot of people don't realize how dysfunctional their whole digestive tract is, and how their bathroom habits are not like they should be. And I many times just ask a person, okay, so do you have kids? And if they say yes, then we're golden. If not, I have to come up with a different example. But if they have kids, and for those of you out there listening that have kids, the next question I ask is, how many times a day did your kid eat, especially when they were under the age of one? And the typical answer is 5 or 6. And I agree. And I say, how many dirty diapers did you change in a day? And a lot of times it's 5 or 6. I'm like, yes, that's exactly right. We should be going to the bathroom like an infant. If you eat 20 to 30 minutes later, you should have to go, because that's what babies do. That's how the human body is supposed to work. That's what happens before we start training ourselves in bad habits. There is a lot of training to hold it, not go, that happens. And that doesn't serve us well as we age. We absorb things that we shouldn't be absorbing. We absorb toxins and bugs and things that we really shouldn't be absorbing, which can lead to further digestive problems, right? So that's a big issue. And, it's one of two things. We either have this irritable bowel syndrome or we have constipation. So we have diarrhea or constipation. And irritable bowel syndrome can actually be a little bit of both, right? And it affects a lot of people. About 50 million Americans is how prevalent this stuff is. So that's 1 in 6. And that, I mean, when you think about it in those terms, you realize, oh, wow, you know, there are 12 people that work in my office. So there are 2 people here that are dealing with irritable bowel. And I mean, you can do the math to how many people are in, wherever you are, right? So it's the symptoms that are associated with irritable bowel, things like bloating, gas, distension, or you just feel like your stomach is all distended, being constipated, having diarrhea, like I said before, cramping. But most likely it's someone who basically right after they eat, they have to go to the bathroom. It's almost instantaneous. And sometimes these people see the food that they just ate coming through. That is very problematic.
Well, but let's take a step back here. I mean, when you say that, most likely it's that you're running to the bathroom after you eat, because that's when people go to the doctor and say something is wrong, and that's how you get an IBS diagnosis.
Right.
There's so many other people who are having all of these problems like diarrhea or constipation, and not having it all the time, or having bloated stomach. I mean, we see that all the time, and people don't even realize that it's bloatedness at that point. I mean, people start to think that's just how their body looks.
Right.
Until we actually, do food sensitivity testing and get some of that under control. And then they're like, oh, I didn't actually know that I was this thin.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time.
I can fit into different clothes. I have to go buy a new wardrobe. Yeah. Or, yeah, it happens. I mean,
or they'll say, I'm working out all the time and I can't get my stomach to go down. And all they have to do is eat different food, and then it's gone.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. So 40% of all visits to internal medicine doctors are for functional bowel disorders, things like IBS, right? And when we break down the cost of that, it's $107 billion a year that is spent on functional gut problems, right? And I mean, I see tons of people that have had no success in the conventional model with helping their digestive issues, right? But it's not because the doctors didn't try. It's because they likely didn't know how to treat it, right? If someone's going to the doctor and saying, oh, I have diarrhea all the time, their answer is to give you a medication that constipates you. Or if you're going to the doctor and you're saying, oh, I have constipation, their answer is to give you a laxative or fiber to make you go, not to figure out, okay, what's causing this diarrhea? What's causing this constipation? And then let's address that and let the body heal itself naturally, right? That's what most people want. They want someone to address the issue. They don't want to have to take a pill every day of the rest of their life so they don't have diarrhea. They don't want to have to take,
go
ahead.
You say that, and I guess I just, knowing people who do have IBS, I think a lot of them don't look at it like, you know, they don't even think about the fact that they might not have to take a pill for IBS, you know, every day. They think, oh, I have IBS. This is now what I have to do. Like,
yeah, but they didn't catch the IBS.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you it's terrifying to think, and we see people so young, in their 20s, even teens, who are put on medication for IBS indefinitely.
Yeah.
And you think, that can't seem like a good idea.
Oh, let's take it all the way down to infants that are having trouble having bowel movements, and the doctors put them on some sort of laxative or stimulant as an infant to go.
Right.
I mean, don't even get me started there. Right. It's just.
But if you think about it, that doesn't make sense. Right. I mean, and I know it's frustrating, you know, because we see I know a lot of people who are suffering from IBS symptoms and have even been put on IBS medication. And when I say, come into the clinic and get this figured out, they're like, oh, no. You know, my doctor says I need this. Or they'll say, insurance covers the medication. And it's like, you've got like 80 years ahead of you of taking this medication.
You know what I say? Stay sick.
I mean,
it's cold and callous. Maybe it sounds a little cold and callous, but at the same time, if you don't want our help, don't come to the office, because I can't invest more time, energy, and into your health than you are.
Right. Right? And we know the fact of the matter is there are so many people who are interested in functional medicine and want our help
you're not going to call up and get into our office tomorrow,
but it is hard, and we've talked about this. They're hard when it's people in our lives that we want to help and aren't interested,
right?
So
that's where it gets frustrating. People know what we do and then they're like, well, no, I'll continue taking this medication and deal with it instead of finding out what's actually causing the problem and doing that. So which is a good segue, which leads me. What actually causes IBS, right? So we've talked about on this show before that one condition, one disease can have a bunch of different causes, or one thing can cause a bunch of different diseases. So, I mean, we pick on gluten a lot, right? I mean, this is one of those things. So we basically, if we have five people that have IBS, they all might have a different cause. Right. One of them may be gluten. One of them may be a bacterial imbalance. One of them may be some sort of parasite. There's a whole host of different things that can be going on. But the idea is, with functional medicine, we want to figure out what the root cause of that is and then address that thing to where then the body heals itself. Right. It's like tending to a tree. If the tree's sick, you don't slather the tree with ointment. Right. You put fertilizer on the soil, you put water in the soil, you give the body, the plant, the nutrients and the water that it needs, and allow it to heal itself. That's what the human body wants to do, right? That's how we fix the human body, and that's how we fix plants, so therefore that's how we fix the human body as well, right? So if we narrow this all down and we really get at what causes problems, we've talked about this on the show before. It's a handful of things. Allergens, things that we may be allergic to, microbes or imbalances in the bugs in your gut, the good bugs, toxins, just a plain old poor diet, the standard American diet, just a pitiful, pitiful diet. Stress. I mean, there's just a handful of things that create these issues, right? And so all of those types of things can trigger symptoms that create thousands of diseases. But five people with irritable bowel, they all may have different causes for the exact same symptom, right? So there's a joke out there, and we got to take a break here in just a minute, but I will tell this joke. And patient goes into the doctor and got his appendix out, and the doctor sent him a bill for $1,000. The patient's like, wow, that's a lot of money for such a simple operation. I was in and out. And doctor's like, well, yes, you are correct. So the doctor sends the patient a new bill for $1 for taking out the appendix and $999 for knowing that it was the appendix that needed to come out, right? So we're just changing the perception. That's what functional medicine is all about. It's knowing exactly what to do and how to fix things to make you better. That's where we excel, right? Figuring out what it is that's wrong and then knowing what to do to fix
it. Right, treating the system, not the symptoms.
Right, not naming and blaming, right? All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into the gut-brain connection and IBS. You're listening to Wellness 101.
You're listening to Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.
And welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in today, we're talking about IBS or irritable bowel syndrome. And before the break, I said that when we came back, I told an amazingly funny, hilarious joke. It got lots of laughter and applause in the studio here. It didn't at all, but I like to think it did. So anyway, but before the break, we were talking, I said that we were going to come back and we're going to talk about the gut-brain connection and IBS and how that's kind of relates. So there was an article written by the Journal of the American Medical Association, the quintessential medical journal in this country. And this guy, Dr. Lin, basically mapped out a whole new way of thinking about irritable bowel syndrome and the psychological symptoms that are seen in patients who are suffering with irritable bowel, right? So he basically took our current view that it's all about bacterial mischief in the small intestine. This bacteria migrates up into the large intestine, and it triggers this immune nervous system response that sends messages to the brain, which causes insomnia and anxiety and depression and impaired cognitive function, right? I mean, whoa, right? The gut immune system. I know that we've talked about it on this show. We've talked about the second brain and how this gut talks to the brain and how they communicate and they send messages back and forth. So if the gut is inflamed and the brain is inflamed, and when that happens, we cause these hormones to be released. And so then the next thing you know, this increases our levels of stress hormones, things like cortisol. It changes our neurotransmitter levels. I mean, your gut is constantly talking to your brain. And when when bacteria get involved, the communication isn't good, right? These little bacteria in your gut basically start this whole pile of immune and neurological events to take place. Right. It just stops our brain from doing what it was supposed to do. Right. It just completely shuts this stuff down. So this guy's whole concept that, you know, that this it threw everything on its head. right? So these, we have poor connections. We have, if the connections aren't good, the communication isn't right, right? It's kind of like when I explain it to patients, I'll say, you know, it's like having a bad connection on your cell phone and it's cutting in and out. I mean, we don't stay on this phone very long. Back in the day, if you've been around long enough to remember when cell phones really, really got going, I mean, you'd be talking along and it would cut out and you would wait and, you know, are you still there? Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? I mean, that was a whole, you know, platform of commercials for a cell phone carrier. Can you hear me now? And now we don't have the patience for that. If the cell phone just crackles a little bit, I mean, we're hanging up and we'll call back when we have better signal or, you know, whatever. We don't handle this poor communication. Well, this sort of stuff, when these bacteria get involved, that's what happens between our gut and our brain. We completely lose, our brain completely loses its ability to communicate. And once we lose communication, we lose function, right? And that is a big culprit. So one of the big things, our gut sends signals to our brain that we have, you know, that we're sick, right? And this, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that it can manifest like, but one of these problems that it can manifest is IBS, right? So the bacteria get all out of whack, changes our communication, then with the communication being broken, now our brain thinks that our gut is sick and we have irritable bowel, right? So there are a lot of like underlying things that can be going on, but the research that we know and that we're relying on here basically says that the two main causes of irritable bowel are food allergies and an overgrowth of bacteria in our small intestine, right? Food allergies, which we've talked about on this show a ton. It doesn't just have to be an allergy. It can be a food sensitivity as well, right? We talk about this over and over. This is why it's so important to get your food sensitivities tested. Figure out what it is that you're not supposed to be eating because, you know, these sensitivities, we've talked about it before, these sensitivities can affect your body for days after you consume a food, right? Days. And so you may not, you know, you may eat a food and think, well, it didn't cause me any problems an hour or two after I ate, so it must be fine for me. But you're not equating it back 3 or 4 days. It's just impossible to put these connections together. It's why it's so important to get tested to figure out what it is that's going on. And then the overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine. So if we dive into this whole food sensitivity thing, so there are a lot of people cling to the food sensitivity test called an IgG test, and I'm not going to get into what an IgG test is, but that's not all that there is for food sensitivities. People can have an IgA reaction to a food as well. It's a different type of reaction. You want to make sure that if you're getting your food sensitivities tested, that you get both tested. You want IgG and IgA. That's for a whole different show as to why that's important. Just trust me, it's important that you're getting both of those things tested, right? So there was another article out there. This one was in the American Journal of Gastroenterology, and they were very clear in their statement. They said that we must respect and recognize the role of food allergies and inflammation in irritable bowel syndromes, right? So basically what they're saying is foods irritate the bowel and digestive system. We refer to these things as food sensitivities. They are extremely common. We haven't had anyone who's done a food sensitivity test that hasn't come back sensitive to at least a handful of foods.
Right. And some people are lucky and they'll come back and they'll have a sensitivity to, you know, a number of foods that they don't eat very often.
Right. They'll be sensitive to kumquats. No yeah. one eats kumquats.
All right. I mean, it'll be, yeah, strange things like alfalfa. I mean, we've got some of them that come back and they're like, I don't even know what that's in, or I never eat that. And that's great. I mean, so we certainly, and typically those are people that come in and say, I'm not sick that I know of. I just want to get tested. And so we'll go ahead and test them. And, they just want to get a baseline of, you know, am I healthy? And so we'll run the food sensitivity test and they'll come back and they won't have many. Most people who are having any sort of significant symptoms have food sensitivities. That's right. Just the way that it goes.
Right. And again, we're talking about sensitivities, not necessarily a true allergy, not something where someone maybe, you know, have an allergy to a peanut and, you know, they eat a peanut, their head swells up and they need an epinephrine shot or they've got to go to the hospital or a shellfish allergy. These are mild food sensitivities. They're not life threatening.
They're not life threatening, but they can cause terrible symptoms.
Tons.
And they can totally affect your life.
Yes, absolutely. And in our clinic, our experience, there are two monsters. Gluten is one, dairy is the other. Humans just don't handle it very well, right? Gluten, if you're just tuning in, you haven't heard anything on this show ever before. Gluten is a protein that's found in wheat, barley, rye, and spelt, I believe. Right. It's a common reaction. It creates a lot of issues. You can go back and listen to our show where we talked about the myth of diagnosis and we go into, you know, all the different, well, we list a few of the different diseases that gluten can actually cause that was documented in the New England Journal of Medicine, 55 diseases that gluten itself causes in the human body. Right. So that's a big one. And dairy is another one.
Well, and also I want to just on gluten really quick.
Sure.
The conventional medicine test that is ran, even if you've, you know, been tested by a conventional medicine medical doctor and been told that your test for gluten antibodies or celiac are normal, you can still have severe reactions to gluten.
Right.
Gluten is that powerful.
To have those, they're talking about very specific blood tests. To have those come back positive, you really have to have advanced disease processes going on or the genetic predisposition to that. And that happens some people do have the genetic predisposition, but it's not nearly as frequently as having a severe gluten sensitivity. But dairy is another one. And, you know, a lot of people want to blame lactose, the sugar in dairy. In our clinic, I'll be honest, we do not find that it's actually the lactose. It's rarely the lactose. It's almost always the casein and whey. It's the proteins in gluten that's the problem.
Dairy.
Or in dairy. Yeah, I said gluten. That's why we have her here, ladies and gentlemen.
That's what I'm for.
Yep. Correct the grammar and catch the errors. But it's the proteins in dairy that's the problem, the casein and the whey. The lactose just isn't it. And, you know, we see the commercials on TV with the, I forget what the milk is called that
lactate.
Doesn't, lactate. And the cow's like, you know, talking about how it's the pesky lactose it's not the lactose. It's rarely the lactose. There's not many people that are actually lactose intolerant. It is the casein and whey that's in there. And so that's why all dairy has to be taken out. And if you have a sensitivity to casein and whey, it's not just cow dairy. It's all mammal dairy, right? That means sheep's milk, goat's milk, and cow's milk all together, right? So it's not just one. The proteins are a much, much bigger issue, right? So, you know, there's other food sensitivities that are out there and that can happen. I mean, soy is another big one. Corn is another big one. Eggs happens a lot as well. And either being sensitive to the yolk or the white. And, you know, if you're fixing eggs at home, you can't separate out the yolk from the white. It looks like you can, but you can't separate the proteins at the molecular level. It just doesn't happen.
Let's face it. So many people come in and they're like, oh, I'm healthy. I'm eating eggs every morning for breakfast.
Yep.
And if you haven't had your food sensitivities checked, you don't know that that's healthy. That could be terrible for you.
Right. All right, we got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the gut microbiome and imbalances there and how that can lead to IBS as well. You're listening to Wellness 101.
You're listening to Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.
And welcome back, everyone. Today, if you're just tuning into the show, we're talking about irritable bowel syndrome or IBS. And before the break, we were talking about food sensitivities and how these things can cause IBS symptoms. And now we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to talk about the gut ecosystem, the microbiome, and how imbalances there can create an issue. So if we look at the small intestine, right, the surface area of the small intestine, if we were to take this thing and stretch it all out, and the small intestine is where you absorb most of your food, your nutrients, your vitamins, your minerals, things like that. It's about the size of a tennis court, right? Now, you can get a mental picture of how big that is. That's a lot. Your small intestine is just a few feet long. But when you unravel all the surface area, holy cow, that is a lot of space to be absorbing nutrients, right? And what's sad, unfortunately, we see a lot of people in our clinic, it's like they're using like 1 square foot of that tennis court to absorb nutrients because they're not getting anything into their system because of poor gut health, poor diet, poor food choices, high levels of stress, toxic metals, all these things that affect your gut microbiome, right? So it's another key piece of this is that the small intestine contains within itself in the ballpark of 60% of your immune system. So we're talking about something that, one, absorbs the nutrients, the vitamins, minerals, proteins from your food, and two, houses about 60% of your immune system, right? This is one particular part of your digestive tract, right? I mean, this whole system is extremely sophisticated, and it's only one cell layer thick. And for those, to put this into perspective, if you were to put your finger on the back of your hand and then just swipe across the back of your hand, you're wiping off tens, if not hundreds, of layers of cells, right? That's how thin this cell layer is. It's so thin, it's replenished every single day, multiple times a day. The barrier is repaired and replenished, right? So if this lining breaks down, if this thin, super thin layer breaks down, your immune system is exposed to all kinds of particles, things from medication, stress hormones, food particles that aren't properly digested, bacteria, other types of microbes and bugs that get in there, right? There's all these different things that can happen. And there are a lot of different things that can cause the gut lining to erode and become, quote, leaky, right? Stress is a big one. My gosh, stress is just huge. That's why we encourage a lot of all of our patients really to decrease their level of stress in any manner possible. And it's not just the, you know, oh, I've got to go, you know, do this, do that, do something else, get home, you know, get the kids cleaned up, fed, washed, put to bed, and then wake up early, you know, go to bed too late, wake up too early, and do it all over again. We're talking about things that the stress that you may not necessarily perceive, the stress of your system not getting enough water throughout the day, the stress of your system not getting enough sleep, the stress of your system not getting enough vitamins and minerals and nutrients that it needs throughout the day, right? That's also stress, right? So that's one piece. Another thing that causes the gut lining to erode, too many antibiotics. Antibiotics completely destroy a gut. Anti-inflammatory medications also, like things like aspirin or Advil, any kind of anti-inflammatory, that erodes the gut. I mean, we all know that aspirin causes ulcers, so it's eating away at the stomach, right? Now, the stomach is a super thick, very protected part of the digestive tract. The small intestine is not. There's a thin mucosal layer and one cell layer thick. It's not that protected, right? We have to take care of it, right? Steroids. That's another thing that erodes the small intestine lining. Intestinal infections, so bacterial infections, bugs, parasites, those types of things can cause it. Like, you know, you can have a protozoan parasite, these microscopic bugs that can really wreak havoc. Low fiber, high sugar diet, which is a typical American diet. Typical American diet does not have anywhere near enough fiber and has way too much sugar. We've talked about it on this show many, many times about how low fiber and high sugar the typical person's diet is. And lastly, another thing that really erodes the small intestine lining is alcohol. Alcohol really affects digestion and absorption of nutrients and can really erode that small intestine lining, right? And so when we erode that lining and cause this leaky gut, we create an immune response, right? So we've just made, we talked about it earlier, that our gut, our small intestine is our second brain. So we create this immune response. We've irritated the second brain, right? And then this creates this whole cascade, this whole immune response that leads to an irritated or irritable bowel, right? We have an irritable bowel. We already said in here that if your gut is upset, your brain is upset. So we have an irritable bowel, then that automatically means we have an irritable brain, right? Then the whole, all kinds of systems break down. We have all kinds of problems that start happening throughout the body. Things like allergies, arthritis, autoimmune condition, our mood disorder. I mean, it's just so many different things that can take place that once that lining of our small intestine is broken down and we create this leaky gut and trigger this immune response, so many different things can take place and happen. And this is a huge, huge problem, right? And so when we consider, if we just step back for a minute and consider that there's 100 trillion bacterial cells inside your gut, right? There are more cells in your gut bacteria, in your gut microbiome, than there are cells that make you up as a person, right? We have more bugs inside of us than we are as a person, right? 10 times as many cells that are bacteria as that we have our own cells. So really, we're only, all of our being, we're only 10% human cells. That's just baffling when you start thinking about the magnitude of these bacteria and why they, why it's so important that these things are in balance and that they're in imbalance with each other. I-N, not imbalanced, like out of balance. We're talking about being in balance with each other so that they can work together in a symbiotic manner and help our, you know, help ourselves out, right? So if we get into DNA, there's 100 times more bacterial DNA in your body than your own DNA. So we've got 10 times more cells and 100 times more DNA that is bacteria than what makes up us as a human, right? So these things have to be in balance. This is, this concept is called the microbiome, right? So if we have a lot of bad bugs growing, or if we have a yeast overgrowth, or if you have parasites, you know, protozoan or bacterial, if you have, you know, worms, we don't see many worms in this country, but it does happen, right?
Yeah, you don't have to have left the country to have worms.
No.
Certainly, we do. It does come up.
No, and in fact, a colleague of mine, actually, I was at a presentation of his, and he was talking about how he treats this lady in West Virginia. This woman is has never left the state of West Virginia. She barely left the county that she's in. She has a parasite, or had at the time, had a parasite that was only known to exist in Africa. Never been out of the country, hadn't even been out of her state, and had barely left her own county, yet she had a parasite that was only known to exist in Africa. All the doctors around her area were baffled because they just, they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. They were testing the wrong thing. She goes to my colleague, he's like, yeah, let's run this test and we'll figure this out. Sure enough, there it was, plain as day. And so he researched, what do we have to do naturally to kill it? We went through the process, took care of the situation for the lady. So you don't have to go somewhere where it's, you know, endemic to have a parasite, or, you know, you don't have to go to, you know, out of the country to be exposed to this stuff. It happens right here. There's too much worldwide travel for it to not happen.
Right. And while worms are not all that common, parasites in general have become increasingly common.
We see parasitic infections a lot in our clinic, a lot more than we think we should. I mean, bacteria get completely out of balance. We see yeast overgrowths like nobody's business. We see all different types of candida. You know, Candida albicans gets the brunt of all this because that's what people are familiar with. But there are different strains of candida. We'll see all different kinds of candida in people, right? This sort of stuff just happens, right? So if we have all these things, we can end up with IBS, right? That's something that can take place. But if we have bad bugs in the wrong spot, it's also an issue, right? So a lot of the bacteria are in our large intestine, but sometimes those bacteria that are supposed to be in a large intestine get up into the small intestine. That is a big, big concern, right? It's not good. Your small intestine should be sterile. And when it's not, we have issues, and that will definitely start triggering IBS. All right, we got to take another break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this whole show on IBS. You're listening to Wellness 101.
That I made inside my head to get me by. 20 years in debt, 20 years in the government, 20 years can never get me by.
Welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in, today we've been talking about irritable bowel syndrome. We've been talking about, you know, different things that can cause it. Well, I say we've been talking about it. I've been talking about a lot of this stuff because this is something that we see a lot in the clinic is digestive upset and people that have been diagnosed with IBS and they were never really told why they have it or what it is that caused it. They just were given some sort of medication because, you know, they had IBS with constipation. And so they were given a medication to make them not constipated, or they have IBS with diarrhea and they were given a medication to stop them up and to eliminate the diarrhea, but they never really, they weren't given any answers as to what it was that was causing the issue. And so they're in our office and we're, you know, a lot of times they're in for other things. It's rare that IBS is the reason someone comes to us. It's a side note that we catch as we start questioning digestive habits.
Or we notice they're on a medication for it.
Or exactly. Or we pick it out of their medication list. That's exactly right. But it's a topic that happens so frequently. I mean, in the United States, our digestive health is just pitiful.
Yeah, it's really bad. And it's hard to find people who do not have some sort of digestive problems, even if they don't have it very often. If it's occasional, it's the norm at this point in our country.
I've talked about it on this show before. I mean, just think about in your office how many times you go in to use the restroom and you're like, whoa, that somebody's having a bad day or somebody ate something that they shouldn't. You never know. That could be that person's norm. That could be what's going on for that poor individual that's having the digestive issues, right? Think about the times that you go on a road trip and you stop off at a you know, to get gas on a trip, and you're just dreading the fact that you need to use the restroom, and you don't know what you're walking into, and it could be like a bomb went off in there. And that's, I mean, I'm kind of making light of it, but it's so true, right? It's just all too common, and it doesn't have to be with all the information, all the knowledge that we have in this country. And that's what we're left with is all this. And then you have doctors out there telling people you only go to the bathroom one or two times a week. That's normal. It's not normal.
Right. There's a range.
Yeah, there's a range. What? No, the range is you should be going one to three times a day. That's your range per day. Every single day you should go to the bathroom. If you're not going number two every single day, you have an issue. Come and see me. Because you need help. Something is wrong.
Yes,
something
and you're
is
on
off.
A downward spiral.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's only going to get worse.
That stuff's toxins. If you're not going every single day, if you're constipated and you're not going every single day, you're just reabsorbing that stuff, right? That's just sitting there and just churning in your system, creating an issue.
And getting harder and harder for you to ever get rid of.
Correct. It's sad.
Right.
But anyway, I digress. So, before the break, we were talking about how if the bacteria that make up our microbiome in our gut, there's 10 times more cells in our microbiome than we are human cells. And there's 100 times more DNA than there is our own human body DNA, right? This is just a very complex, big thing. And we were talking about how, you know, the small intestine should stay sterile. And when it's not, it creates problems, right? So, you know, one thing that people do come to us for is SIBO or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, right? And so this is starting to get a little bit of traction in modern medicine, right? There's the JAMA did a study here not too long ago. I don't remember exactly.
JAMA is the Journal of American Medical Association.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned that journal earlier in the show. I don't know if I used the word JAMA or not, but sorry.
Everyone is on a nickname basis with the journal.
With the top journals. Yeah. that's what happens when you read so much. So there's studies that show that eliminating the SIBO, the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, can reduce symptoms of IBS, right? I mean, they're starting to become mainstream medical information. The problem is no one reads this stuff. I'm pretty certain I'm one of a handful of doctors in the country that actually reads this information that comes out, right? Because we have patients that are like, well, no, my doctor doesn't say anything about this. I'm like, it's very clear. Here's the journal article. You know, you can take it back to them and say, here, what, you know, here's some information for you. I mean, there's no excuse. I'm sorry. There's just no excuse for not knowing that sort of information, especially this big stuff. If it's cutting edge, yeah, maybe I get not understanding or not reading or not staying up on it. But this is big stuff affecting monster things that's been around for a little while, right? So there's another study, Annals of Internal Medicine, another big journal. They showed they were using a non-absorbed antibiotic called rifaximin. Rifaximin. And you'll see research or commercials rather on this particular drug on TV, right? For 10 days, people took this and it resulted in a dramatic improvement in bloating and overall symptoms of IBS, basically by clearing out the overgrowth of bacteria. So a lot of people that have SIBO, they'll get this medication prescribed to them. That's great. But they didn't do anything to fix the reasons why the bacteria was overgrowing in the first place, so it comes back. Guess what? They get on another round, and then it works, and then it comes back, and they get on another round, and it works. And it means just a vicious cycle. And finally, eventually, people just say, enough's enough. I can't do this anymore, right? So this is what I'm talking about. No one is addressing the root cause. We've got to come back and figure out what the root causes are. Research tells us the main causes of irritable bowel syndrome are food sensitivities and an overgrowth of bacteria. Food sensitivities come because our gut breaks down, right? We're consuming a food too much or too frequently. We're sensitive to the proteins in it. It causes our gut to break down. The overgrowth of bacteria comes because we don't have an environment set up to grow bacteria the way we're supposed to. We consume way too many sugars. We don't consume enough good, healthy fats. We don't consume enough protein. We don't consume enough fiber, right? It's a standard American diet. It's a sad thing. It's pitiful, right? So other things that contribute, we don't have enough digestive enzymes. I can't tell you how many people that we have that don't create enough digestive enzymes. If you're over the age of 35, you likely don't create the digestive enzymes necessary to break down the food that you're consuming on a daily basis. That's research that comes out of Cleveland Clinic. That goes back to stuff that I did, you know, a decade ago when I was getting my PhD. It was about B12 deficiencies, but there's a segment in my research about people that have gastric bypass and how that affects B12 deficiency. But they were talking about how atrophic gastritis is this condition where you don't have enough digestive enzymes, so you can't absorb your food. You can't break this stuff down. It's a big deal, and it happens in people over the age of 35, right? Parasites is another one. Zinc, we hammered on parasites on the show today. Another one is zinc, magnesium deficiencies. Pick a mineral. There's a ton of them that you can have a deficiency in. Another piece of this puzzle is a heavy metal toxicity. Not having enough of the body's ability to detoxify causes these things to bioaccumulate. So people have these high levels of toxic metals, and they're like, how did I get this? Well, you got this over a lifetime of being exposed, right? This is what we work on and what we do, right? We try to help people get to the root of what it is that's causing their issue and fix that. And we address IBS exactly the same.
Right. And IBS that has been diagnosed and just the symptoms. Because right. A lot of people have not been diagnosed, but they're having major digestive symptoms.
Right. So that's the show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something. If you want more information, visit us on our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram. Give us a call. Our office number is 314-293-8123. Shoot us an email. We're happy to talk to you, get back to you, answer any questions. We do our best to respond as quickly as possible. And that's the show. So for Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.
Wellness 101 has been brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your destination for functional medicine in St. Louis. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.